Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya, where we talk all about Lyme and beyond, because as most of us know, Lyme rarely travels alone. I created this podcast to offer you hope and to remind you that healing is possible, because I healed from my own 13-year journey. Although it was exhausting physically, emotionally, and financially, it truly was a blessing as it reshaped my mind, body, and soul. In this space, we share raw and real conversations with those who have made it to the other side of the journey, along with breaking down different topics and approaches with practitioners. My goal is to make you feel less alone, more empowered, and confident in being your own advocate. So thank you so much for tuning in today. And if you're looking for more tips and resources, I share everything I learned along my journey on my Lyme and Beyond with Tanya website. So now let's get to today's guest. You know, so many times people that deal with a chronic illness often have their life just do a 180 because of their journey. And my guest today is this is exactly what happened with her. She is a chemical engineer, and she started seeing her life fall to pieces before her eyes, and she could not get answers. And so that's what led her down this journey. She had mold, which is, you know, the name of my podcast, Lyme and Beyond. It's not just Lyme. There's so many things that go along with this. And I often feel mold can be one of those hidden stressors that gets missed so many times, which inhibits either our healing or it makes us relapse on the regular. So I'm so excited to welcome Arianna Thacker to the show. She is the founder and CEO of Mold Co., which is actually a clinician-led telehealth platform, you guys. Telehealth. How many people are always looking for telehealth? So I'm super excited to have her share a bit of her journey. And we're just going to dive deep into everything mold today. So I'm looking forward to this episode. You might want to grab a pen and a piece of paper, because I think there might be some free tips in this episode that you can walk away with. So, Ariana, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Tanya, for having me here. Excited to talk about mold.
Right? Like, it's we get passionate about things that we go through, right? Because there's so much misinformation out there. It's scary, it's overwhelming. And so I know a lot of the people that have followed me for the years know that I didn't personally deal with mold. So, you know, years ago, I probably couldn't tell you much about it. Now I can tell you a lot more about it, but I always love to learn more information. So I'm super excited to have you. So now, where do we start? Let's just kind of talk a little bit about your personal journey. Like, what led you down this road to creating this telehealth platform, which, just by the way, I'm telling you, it sounds fabulous.
Thank you. So back in 2022, I got sick from mold in my Miami home. I started experiencing fairly debilitating symptoms at the time. And what how that showed up more specifically was that I felt like I had just a few functional hours in the day. Most of the day was spent in bed, taking Zoom calls with my camera off, not really having energy to have the day-to-day life that I would have normally. I would also have some hair loss, which was new to me too. I started experiencing pretty significant brain fog and cognitive issues. And how that actually showed up was I was having to reread the same email multiple times. And later into the illness, I actually started slurring my words with friends. So all of these things showed up while being exposed to mold, which was all very new to me because prior to that, I didn't have a history of health issues. I was fairly active. I recall like working out 1 to 2 hours a day, putting in several hours a day into work, and having just very high energy levels and high abilities to just process a lot of information very quickly. And then that took a turn after moving into my Miami home. So it was just a matter of months of being exposed to where I started feeling all these different symptoms. And it wasn't just one problem symptom, as I mentioned, it's like multiple. I also was experiencing gastrointestinal issues. It was challenging to eat even gluten. I'd have like IBS type symptoms. I'd wake up with aches and joint pain and general weakness. So it was just multiple different symptoms hitting throughout my time there. And then also even after moving out, and it was one of the most challenging journeys I've gone through to date. And
I bet.
on the other side of that, just now, having gone through that and having finally healed, I also have immense gratitude for that situation too. So I also want to say that there's hope that if you are experiencing what I experienced, there are solutions and there is hope.
Yes, thank you. Those are such powerful words. And I mean, how scary, right? Like I mean, most of us that are listening, myself included, life is normal, life is great until it's not, right? And then things come spiraling down and we don't know what's going on. So it sounds like maybe you moved into your home and then within a couple of months you started noticing not just one thing, like a layer of things that was impossible to ignore, right? Like if maybe there was one or two things going on, well, this is really weird, you know, and kind of go about your day, but you just got smacked with all these symptoms and it basically debilitated you from your everyday life that you knew. And so kind of take us down, like what did you do? Did you discover it was mold and then move out of your house? Or did you move out of your house thinking, okay, I don't know what's wrong. Is my house possessed? Like, right? I wasn't sick until I moved here. Like, how did that play out?
I would say in October, had strong suspicions it was mold, and then that became validated with two different inspectors that visited the home. So the first inspector found a little bit of mold. That was one hired by the landlord, and then I hired a third party inspector to check out the unit, and that inspector found significantly more mold. So, after that discovery and suspicion of exposure, moved out and didn't look back. Ended up discarding a lot of my things, including furniture. Ended up putting my valuables that I wanted to keep in a storage unit, which I haven't had a chance to visit since. I've just left it there with hopes of maybe one day recovering it. I'm not so optimistic that that's even possible. So it was essentially like first discovering mold, which took a while. It wasn't obvious that it was a mold issue. I wasn't even aware that mold could cause these types of symptoms. And now I'm just a lot more attuned to the issues. Having that earthy, musty odor, having visible mold present, having known water damage, having stains, peeling paint, warped floors, all of these are signs of environmental exposure that should be investigated further.
Wow. Yeah. And it's interesting that you say your landlord hired an inspector and found a little bit of mold. And then you hired an outside inspector and a different picture, right? So it just goes to show, just like with practitioners, right? They're not all treated equally. So it's important to get accurate testing from somebody that you have confidence in. So that's always a good tip as well.
Yeah, and I would say ensuring that the mold inspector is also specialized in mold. There's so many different inspectors out there that it's not their specialty. They don't really have a lot of experience doing that, and they often miss the obvious signs too. So the false negative rate is high. Like they could be missing some really obvious visible environmental cues, like the ones I've listed earlier, even high indoor humidity consistently above around 60%. These are all really telltale signs of potential microbial growth in the home.
Yeah. And I've also learned too, just, you know, with speaking with different people in that specialize in this field, is that I love that you nailed that, Ariana, is that not everybody specializes in mold. There are some states, unfortunately, that it is very easy to be able to say you're a mold inspector, right? Like you can pay for a little course, get a little certificate. And so you really have to be diligent and do your own research and your own homework when you're looking for somebody to do proper testing and proper remediation, because it really can be the key factor to, you know, getting to the other side of this.
Absolutely.
So your journey, I don't know, does kind of your healing journey tie into what you do now? Should we mix it all together, or I'm going to let you figure out how you want to start sharing the next part?
So I'm not a medical doctor, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not an inspector, but I am an entrepreneur and I love to build systems. So after this journey, what I ended up doing was getting really obsessive about the subject and reading tons of publications, getting in touch with the world experts, convincing them to join our team at Moldco, and creating a solution for patients that was essentially the solution I wish I had when I got sick. So that includes very affordable evidence-based lab testing not just for your home, but also for your body, including the key biomarkers that are off due to mold exposure, as well as a care approach that is also evidence-based with specialized providers trained in this field. And that approach also has concierge care. It has the medications delivered to your door. So you're really feeling held throughout the process. Unfortunately, the experience that these patients go through is that there's a lot of gaslighting in standard medical practice, a lot of misinformation. There's no screening for mold. There's no education for patients around what the common symptoms are for mold beyond the obvious, like allergy, asthma, and fungal infection issues related to mold. So what ends up happening is that these patients go through this referral ping pong system, spending a lot of time and money visiting multiple specialized providers. Some of these patients end up going to alternative medicine clinics, and the ones that are really qualified to treat these patients end up having multi-month, if not multi-year, wait lists for these patients. They end up spending tens of thousands, if not over $100,000, getting better. And that includes the environmental side, that includes the medical bills, the moving costs, the storage costs, the cost of all the belongings likely to be discarded. So it ends up being this very treacherous just process for patients. So the vision of what we're building is to just eliminate a lot of that pain and suffering and time and money spent with solutions that actually help patients and solutions that have been the most vetted solutions in the field as we know it today. And to further develop that, because we don't want to have hubris that we know everything right now. We don't. We want to advance R&D in this space and find what's even a better set of solutions to offer to patients, like what are the best possible biomarkers and treatment and care approach.
Yeah, I love that. And it's so true because we learn so much as time goes on. I mean, I look back when I started my journey over a decade ago. You know, I got, so we're 2026. I got bit in 04 and got sick in 08. And I mean, so many things have changed back then, right? That new things that we've learned, more options, more practitioners that are knowledgeable in Lyme. I know oftentimes it doesn't seem that way to the current community, but truly we have made a lot of strides forward since my time of being infected with Lyme. So I'm sure the same for mold, right? The more patient data we can gain, can help us better help people in the future. So I love that you guys are constantly continuing to learn because nobody can know everything about everything. It's just not possible.
Yeah,
So
exactly.
as far as your company, like it truly sounds incredible. So it sounds like it's kind of you're going to walk holding their hand, right? Like you're going to walk them down the path. Now, before we kind of dive into the process and all this stuff, does your company do remediation, or is it just the initial body testing and then how to kind of get you through the journey?
Remediation is not currently something we offer. What we are hoping to do is increase our resources and we call it like coaching to guide patients through the inspection and remediation journey. That really requires someone being hands-on at the location, and it could be like a multi-week, multi-month process. So for us, we're more so focused on the healthcare aspects and then also advancing the medical field. So we've amassed a very large data set in the space. In fact, we believe it to be the largest, the world's largest data set in the space. And our intention is to analyze that and better understand what is the next generation of lab testing and care available. So we're more so focused on the medical, clinical, and I would say even scientific aspects of mold-related illness. And we work with fairly vetted inspectors and remediators that we refer to our patients if they ever need that help. Several of our patients are still in environment, so they absolutely do need that help. Luckily, some of the patients are renting, so they wouldn't necessarily take on the burden of remediation. They have more options than homeowners even. They can relocate to find new housing if the landlord's not amenable, or if they just feel like the best solution for them is relocating. So we do offer those resources and our network to patients versus us taking on so much scope.
Perfect. I love that. Okay. Just wanted to be clear on exactly what you guys do. And it sounds like you do everything but that, right? Which is fabulous. So kind of walk us through what somebody can expect from checking out your platform. Kind of like from start to finish, and then we can also, share additional resources when we get into testing. Maybe you could talk about some of the labs that you use, that type of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. We answer three key questions for patients. So, question one, which is the most common question, is am I even being exposed? Before the recording, you had mentioned that a lot of folks have these assumptions around exposure. For example, I'm in a new build, so I can't be exposed. I know my house is clean, so I can't be exposed. It's really not a question of a new build versus an older building or cleanliness in the home. It's really more so a question of if water damage happened in the home at any point. And water damage could happen during the building and construction phase of a new building. Materials could be left outside in the rain, and then that's embedded in the home. There could be hidden leaks. There could be a loose nail head on the roof that then leads to water damage in the home and behind the walls. There could be consistent high indoor humidity. There could have been a flooding event, a pipe burst, et cetera. There's a number of ways that microbial growth happens in these water damaged buildings, and it's not really a question of whether it's old or new, and it can happen to a number of buildings. So we help answer that question primarily through our environmental test, which is DIY at home. You take a cloth that we offer in the mail, you wipe down different surfaces, you collect as much dust as possible, and then ship that to our lab, and we analyze that for the top fungal species that we would expect in a water damaged building. And we also offer essentially a low, medium, or high score for how bad is your exposure. So that's one offering that we have. The second offering that we have is
Actually, can I
more.
stop you right there?
Yeah.
Sorry, I have questions on that one. And yes, that was such an important point. And I love how you explain how a new build versus a clean, dirty home, like it doesn't matter because we don't know, we have no idea. And so people need to not dismiss the fact that they actually could be living in mold. So thank you for describing that. So when you're talking about a dust sample, so to say, so are you talking about, do you use the same cloth to get dust in your kitchen that you would at the other end of your house? Because my understanding is that if you come back with mold, like you're not really narrowing it down to what part of your home is being affected.
You're correct. So the dust test does have limitations. It more so answers, is exposure happening, yes or no, and how bad is it on a low, medium, high scale, but it doesn't tell you exactly where the source is coming from. And that's where an inspector would be needed. So a dust test is a great way to just have that litmus test at a fraction of the price of an inspector, and to better understand how problematic is your exposure before investing the money and also the time and working with an inspector and finding all those point sources in the home. If you're already confident that you are being exposed and it's at a problematic level, you can skip the dust test and go directly for an inspector. I would say some tips to look for, making sure your inspector is mold specialized. Ideally, they have certifications like IICRC, NORMI, or ACAC. Ideally, mold is all they do, and they do that day in, day out. It's not like a subset in a pest control company, and they're highly rated. I would say finding a really good inspector is key, because that inspector can then help you prioritize. If you, for example, if you have multiple point sources, and a remediation may be a really costly thing, help you prioritize what are the most pressing sources to handle, and also create a scope of work for a remediator, which shouldn't be the same person as the inspector, to then address the issue. So Just to summarize, the dust test is more so yes or no, and how bad is this worth investing time and money and energy into, versus telling you, okay, the source is exactly here.
Yes, no, I love that in that because let's rule it out. Either you have it or you don't, right? So that's good that it's something that's affordable for somebody to do, easy for somebody to do, right? You get a cloth, you go around and you do a little dusting. We all need that anyways in our home, right? And then you can at least identify if your home has the mold, right? And then you can get further deep into the inspection and figure out where it is in your home, how many places it's affected, and at what level, right? Like, because that can also determine, do you want to fix this? Do you want to move? Do you want, like there's a lot of variables in there. So that's going to give you a better idea of which path you want to take moving forward. And I also love the fact that you mentioned the inspector should never be the remediator, kind of like the conflict of interest, right? So good point there.
Yeah, I will have one more layer to this discussion too. If you do want to narrow which room is problematic, a dust test could actually help with that. Because what you can do is isolate having a single dust test per room, and then you can have a higher level of confidence where the exposure may be specific to the room, but it's still not going to tell you exactly where the source is in that room. That tends to be a
Right.
more,
Okay.
yeah, so that's a bigger cost investment. We usually don't encourage patients doing that, instead working with an inspector to do that kind of analysis, but that's also an option if you do want to narrow down if a specific room is problematic.
Okay, perfect. That's good information because, we never recommend, treating Lyme without a practitioner. We never recommend remediating your home, but there are things that sometimes we just have to do. You know what I mean? So the more information's knowledge. We want knowledge gives us power. So the more information we can have, the better we can make these decisions best for ourselves. So when it comes to kind of, okay, so now we know that we have mold in the home, right? And that's kind of the extent of what your platform does. And now we're going to get into as far as the home, the environment. So now we're going to kind of get into the person, the body, the health side of it. So what, I mean, where do you want to start? Like kind of talk about how, what labs do you use to test people? Do you have certain ones you recommend? And is your primary care doctor lab a good resource? Because we certainly know it's not for Lyme. So I don't know, is it for mold? So I'll let you go through that.
Yeah, I rarely see primary care providers or even immunologists, allergists, and other specialists offering the set of labs we do. So I would say it's quite unique to the specialized field of what's called CIRS, or chronic inflammatory response syndrome medicine. Within CIRS medicine, the key labs are MMP9, MSH, TGF-beta1, C4A. There's also VEGF and HLA haplotype testing. So we offer all those labs and more. The top three markers that tend to be dysregulated in these patients, we actually offer in a lab test that's only $56. So that's at cost for us. And that's MMP9, MSH, and TGF-beta1. MSH is this, we consider this master regulator hormone in the body, which impacts sleep and circadian rhythms and pain and even urination. So it's upstream of those functions in the body. MSH tends to be quite depressed, if even undetected, in these patients. MMP9 is a inflammatory marker, as is TGF-beta1, and we see both of those upregulated in these patients. So I would say that's our highest signal test, especially for the price. We also have a more complete panel with several more markers that are available too. And then for the genetic testing, HLA haplotype testing, that determines your susceptibility based on the research we understand today. That research was actually pioneered by Dr. Shoemaker and also through Dr. Scott McMahon, who's our medical director's clinic. So we offer all of those lab tests for the body. I would say more urgent and important if you're experiencing symptoms such as fatigue, reoccurring headaches, brain fog, unexplained muscle aches, joint pain, difficulty with physical effort, abdominal pain, sinus congestion, shortness of breath, or increased urination. Like those are the top 10 symptoms we see in these patients. I would start with the starter panel and also the environmental test just to make sure you're not in exposure and to make sure that the markers we would expect to see upregulated or downregulated are in normal range.
Perfect. So a lot of those markers, like I'm like, what is she talking about? But good
Yeah.
information, good information. And also, I want to point out for the listeners, so if you're going through a Lyme journey, whether you're at the beginning of it or you're in the middle of it, you're struggling, you're having all these setbacks, you just can't seem to move the needle. I can't stress this enough. Please, please, please get tested for mold. Because there are so many hidden stressors. And what I see in the community is number one is the mold, right? I see metal toxicity. I see sometimes parasite issues and also your oral health. So many people might have a missing piece going on in their mouth that they are unaware of. So these are just hidden stressors that you really need to rule out. Because it could make your journey so much longer. It can make it so much more frustrating because you're only battling one of the problems, right? When you really have an underlying problem. That's why I truly just call them the hidden stressors because they're the things we really don't know about, but they could be an important piece to the puzzle. I've seen it a million times. I'm sure you have too, Ariana.
There's so much more going on in our environment than we're aware of. It's all hidden. It's in our food, it's in our air, it's in our water. We're constantly getting exposed to these different microbes, biotoxins, and man-made chemicals. So I would say yes, absolutely. It's never just mold that we're exposed to. What we see though is And what we've developed at Mold Co. is probably the most evidence-based approach for understanding mold specifically and mold exposure and how to get better and recover from that. And hopefully that also resolves a lot of the symptoms and lifestyle and I would say just things that hold patients back from living their fullest lives. Like that's our intention to just make sure that all these like things that hold us back are removed, and the body
Right.
can
And you're
recover.
a perfect example because I know that you tested for Lyme and co-infections, right? But you never really had the symptoms from that. You treated the mold and then you were well and fine. And oftentimes that is what can happen too, because there's whether the Lyme triggered the mold triggered the Lyme, like, the cat chases the mouse, whatever. But oftentimes, if you, whatever the root causes, if you address that, your body is able to support itself, right? You have a strong foundation and not allowing the other microbes to interfere with what's going on.
Correct. I did test positive for antibodies of I believe Bartonella and Babesia. It wasn't at the level of a Lyme disease or tick-borne illness diagnoses. And my symptoms ended up resolving due to mold treatment and care with those biomarkers being tested too. I would say like I would love to see so much more research on the tick-borne illness front, especially what we're seeing with Alpha Gal online. That's quite intimidating and quite scary. I think there's just so much more for us to understand around tick-borne illness and the impacts to human health, especially like why are we responding in this way? What are the actual diagnostic tests to identify this illness, and how do we do a better job in preventative health, especially like I live on the Northeast, and this weekend I was just covered with a few ticks actually. Like how do we protect ourselves from our environment? I think those are all important questions to ask.
Yeah, they are 100%, and there is definitely an influx of ticks around the states this year. which is kind of a whole nother topic, right?
Yeah.
So, all right. So now, somebody, going through the MoldCo program or using your platform. So you get a diagnosis, you have mold, and then kind of, and I'm assuming it's not a one size fits all, just like it's not for Lyme disease as well. So I know you might not be able to pinpoint specifics, but can you share some of the types of ways that you approach mold?
Yeah, so our care approach, we label it in three different phases. Detox and the key medication prescribed in the detox phase is not just only one medication in each phase. By the way, is colicevelam, which is a FDA-approved medication, typically prescribed for high cholesterol, here used off-label for mold-related illness or mold toxicity. And what that does is essentially binds and removes the toxins from the body. So that's one key phase. There's multiple other steps under detox, but just to keep it simple for listeners. And the next step is the clear phase, which is an EDTA-based nasal spray to address problematic bacteria that tend to house in the nasal passages in patients. And that's also a well-known biofilm disruptor too. So that's included in the second phase. And then the third phase is called repair. So detox, clear, repair. And under repair, we have a VIP peptide. So vasointestinal peptide is very critical and key to SIRS research. So we offer all three of those prescribed medications on our platform, as well as supplement support. We endorse the use of high dose omega-3s for certain patients, as well as dietary support like a low amylose diet. So we include all of that as part of the care journey and care experience for the patients, and how those steps are transitioned, how they're titrated, which steps are applied to which patients, who's included or excluded from the care journey. All of that's included as part of our product and clinical logic.
Okay, I love that. So it's basically a detox, clear, and repair. And then each individual person goes through those categories, but maybe in different ways.
Correct.
Okay, I love that, we truly, in any chronic illness, I don't think that we can always treat one person as, or everybody as a whole, right? Because we're so individualized with other things that are going on within our body. So we really need to have, more one-on-one protocols for everybody, but you just have a guideline of the detox, clear, and repair. And I love that. So perfect. All right. So when people are going through this journey, again, probably kind of an open-ended question, what type of time frame are you seeing for people to be able to, one, notice, okay, I think this might be working, right? And then also maybe towards the end of the journey as well.
We tend to see pretty significant improvement by the 7 month mark. So this is the data as of today. Roughly 95% of our patients have some improvement in the first 30 days. It's not meaningful enough to say, okay, I'm done with care. However, it is a step in the right direction. And then by the 7 month mark, plus, what we tend to see is 77% symptoms resolved. And these patients come in with 27 symptoms on average. So having 77% of those symptoms eliminated by the 7 month mark is a pretty substantial life change for several of these patients. Not all the patients get better, candidly. What we tend to see in clinical practice is 90% of patients get somewhere between 70 to 90% better following the Shoemaker protocol. So we're seeing results that track with that. And I would say this is the opportunity for the research that we're conducting for the next generation of care and the care approach that we have, as well as the lab testing. Like, how do we get 100% of patients to 100%? Like, that's a question I definitely want to have answered.
Always our mission, right?
Yeah.
I love that. So, all right, when you're treating somebody and there's a lot of misunderstanding, people are like, well, you should treat Lyme before you treat mold, or you should treat mold before you treat Lyme. Like, we won't go into that, but I do have a question kind of in relation to that. So, if somebody is living in mold, can you treat them? Is it worth treating? Can they get well if they're not going to remediate the home or move? That's always a big question.
I would say the ideal scenario is not being in the environment. However, that's not real life. It's also not real life to have like a bubble boy sterile environment. So we opt to treat patients still in the environment, and we still do see improvement in those patients. It's not at the level of patients completely out of the environment, but it is supportive, it is helpful, and it is something that we encourage and endorse. So there's that. And I would say there are a number of band-aid solutions to better manage your environment until you're able to relocate or remediate. So that includes getting air purifiers and also opening the windows of your home so you're getting fresh air coming in, limiting your time in rooms that are known to be problematic, and spending as much time outdoors or in other environments as possible. So there's a number of ways that you can reduce exposure day to day while you're still living in the environment. And also, I wouldn't ever have the goal of living in a completely sterile home. It's just not realistic. It's not possible. You're going to stress yourself out trying to achieve that and spend lots and lots of money hoping for that outcome. The number I reported earlier, the 77% number, includes both patients in and out of environment. So I would still say that still has meaningful outcomes in starting treatment, even while still in the environment.
Oh, that is so good to know because, like you said, like it's just not that easy. I know we can tell people, no, you got to get out of your home, but it just you
Challenge.
can't just always pick up and do that. I understand that. And actually, this kind of leads me back to the whole dust cloth test that you talked about earlier in the show. Is that so? Somebody that one, we need to know if our home is even, contaminated. First of all, so if we know ahead of time that whether our house has mold or not, we can't move and we can't spend the money to remediate, right? Maybe the multiple cloth testing would be beneficial to find out which rooms have the higher level or which rooms are infected versus not infected to kind of try to seal those off and not utilize them if you're going to be forced to live in this environment while you treat.
Yes, it really just depends on your budget. Like we don't usually encourage the Ferrari for patients if they can't afford it. It just doesn't make sense, and the Camry gets you from A to B. So that's more so our approach. So starting more I would say conservatively with a single dust test could also work just to get that validation of whether you're in exposure or not. That obviously matters for the size of your home. The upper limit we usually share is 2,500 square feet for a single dust test. The ideal scenario would be having a single dust test per home, but that's also not necessarily required. That more so answers the question which room could the source be coming from?
Right.
But you get a lot of information just with a single dust test in your home. Like you, that's like a quick validation of whether the exposures are problematic or not.
Okay, perfect. So now, before we kind of wrap this up, you talked about we have a lot of band-aid things, right? I always love to, I tell people in the Lyme community, if you don't have a practitioner, you can't afford one, you just think you can't do anything. I'm always saying work on your nervous system and detox your body, right? Like those are things that you can do on your own at home instead of just throwing your hands in the air and giving up, right? So I'm just going to let you share all the tips, everything that can the listeners can benefit from, because it is a scary time, right? Like they're going, whether they're juggling with mold or Lyme or another chronic infection, right? And mold is in there as well. There's a lot on their plate, right? They have to really financially allocate their resources appropriately, and it's overwhelming, and we don't know what to do, but we know the longer we do nothing, the worse we're going to get. So maybe if you could talk through some of these band-aid tips, kind of from like whether it's how you could help your body, support your body, or how you could help your home while you're in this middle process, so to say.
Absolutely. There's a lot to share on this subject. So, starting with diet, the approach endorsed by our team is something called the low amylose diet. We have some more information about that on our website at moldco.com. We also have a free guide that we've curated with some of the best resources and education available. It was like tens and tens of hours of research and also work from our team to put that guide together. We offer
That's
as well.
fabulous, and it's free right on your website.
Yeah, it's free. If you can't find it for whatever reason, please feel free to email us at support@moldco.com and we can send you a copy directly. We also offer a free assessment for the environmental and health signs that are most associated with mold exposure. So that includes a lot of the symptoms and environmental telltale signs that I mentioned on this podcast. So if you want to go through that experience and see if what your assessment is, that's also free on our website. Beyond all of that, I would say that if you're aware of the signs and you're aware of the symptoms and you take the free assessment, you've read the guide and you've done as much as possible there, including getting an air purifier and airing out the home and spending time outdoors. You're following the low amylose diet, and you're still not getting better, but you're convinced that it's mold, and the health signs are lining up. Then I think it could make sense to spend the $56 to do the starter panel at cost. Which is at cost for us. And that's mainly, I would say, more of an educational and awareness product for us. Like, we're not making money on that. We just want patients to get answers. So that could be worthwhile. It's not free, but it's as close to free as we can make
It
it
is,
as a
yes, and we
business.
appreciate that, yes.
So I'd say between all of those resources, you're fairly well covered.
Okay, perfect. So now if we do end up having mold and we find out that we do have mold in our home, those things that you mentioned, they're still going to help us, right? We may not feel better, but maybe we won't continue to get worse while we're trying to figure out on, navigate the path.
Yeah, and it's so patient dependent. The patients that end up being the best off do not have the genetic susceptibility. They're out of exposure. They have a generally healthy lifestyle. They're spending time outdoors. They're eating a clean diet. They have movement and exercise in their life. They're staying connected to loved ones and friends and family members. Like, they're not isolating at home. So these patients tend to do the best. And then on the other end, patients that do have the genetic susceptibility, they had significant exposure for several years, they're immunocompromised, they're in a stressed state, they're not eating well, not having a lot of movement. So I would say there's a pretty big spectrum of how patients show up, who gets sick, how sick they get, and how quickly they recover. So it is very patient dependent too.
All right. So, any other tips that we might need to know about? There's, I hear in the community for your home, like, can we fog our home? Can we, there's a lot of talk about even filtration, air purifiers. Like, is it really stirring up the mycotoxins in the home? Is it like, I know that there could be a lot of guidelines as far as what purifiers are recommended for a home in this environment, because what we don't want to do is we don't want to make the mistake of stirring up these mycotoxins in our home, right? And making things worse. But we don't know what we don't know. So, what kind of information can you share on things that we should be looking out for or be cautious of?
I would say our favorite, like our team and my personal favorite, is the AeroAsis air purifiers. This specific company is designed their products for the CERS community. We've seen great case studies in patients using these air purifiers. I worked with the founder there to get third-party validation of their air purifiers across multiple microbes and benchmark those reports to many other air purifiers, and they still came out on top. So that's the air purifier we recommend,
Okay.
and we just love working with them. And I would say the other tip to mention is that we prefer to remove the material versus use chemicals or biocides in the home. Those tend to yield worse patient outcomes. We have seen cases where post remediation patients actually get a lot more sick, and because of the use of biocides and chemicals. So our preference is removing any materials that have had contamination, and working with an inspector and remediator that's also more medically informed if you are quite sick. You ultimately probably would need that extra TLC in the home. There's one book I love specifically related to this topic, and that's John Banta's book, Mold Controlled. I would say that's one of the better, if not the best book I've read on the subject of environmental exposure, in a way that's also very easy to follow. It's accessible. It gives you a lot of life tips that are you can actually apply, versus it being more academic and maybe even a little too scientific to apply to
Love
day-to-day life.
that. Yes, we know that. And listeners, as always, the book, the website, the information that Ariana shared today will be in the description of this episode, as always. So, wow, so much information and so much good information. It really is powerful to be able to educate ourselves and understand what we're up against. And like, you mentioned at the beginning of the show, this isn't a hopeless diagnosis, right? There's so much hope. There's so much way, so many ways to get better. We just need to have all the resources at our fingertips to be able to make the best decisions for us.
Absolutely. The far, far majority of patients can and do recover with the right solution. So, I would say it's far from a hopeless scenario.
I love that. So we covered a lot. Did we miss anything? Any one final tip you want to share with the listeners?
I would say you don't need as many supplements as you think. There's a lot of mold kits and tons of supplements getting pushed on these patients. I've talked to patients that were spending hundreds and thousands of dollars a month on their supplements. Our take is that you can have a much more minimalist approach to that. And in fact, some of these supplements can be harmful for patients. We actually don't endorse, surprisingly, turmeric. So there's a lot of these like surprising findings with the supplements that we're also still discovering more and more each day. And we also don't at this point in time endorse the use of antifungals. This is not a fungal infection at its core. Not to say that some patients could separately have a fungal infection just with SIRS patients or patients dealing with mold-related illness and the way that was described. Symptoms describe the inflammatory response to mold. It's not a fungal infection, and we don't endorse the use of antifungals.
Interesting. Okay. Did not know that.
Yeah.
So much information.
So much.
Wow. Ariana, thank you so much. And thank you for joining me and sharing all the information. And I'm excited to personally check out your website. I want to check out some of these free materials that you have on there. Again, listeners, the information will be in the description of this episode. And I just appreciate what you're doing for the community. And, you turned your pain into a mission, and I appreciate you for that.
Thank you, Tanya. I enjoyed the show. I appreciate you too.